I sat up here today and I started to get this incredible feeling of sadness. I guess that some of you are feeling. You don't have to be sad. I'm not going anywhere. So let's meditate. So find that still place of your body. Get your body nice and settled into its perfect asana. And then just stay. Feel the pull of the earth pulling your body down, rooting it all the way down to the center of the earth. Let your body relax into that energy. Then simultaneously feel that energy that rises the body up, like towards the stars. Let the body float up, that energy. And try to find some balance in between there, the still point between two opposing forces. This is physical stillness. It happens when our winds are perfectly aligned and we reach a state of physical bliss. and from listening to the body, we go to listen to the mind. Watching the thoughts that pass through our mind. Of how we are feeling and what we are experiencing. And we start to explore that question, who is the me? Like, when I say Lama Christy is meditating right now, Who do I mean? And you have to use your own name, can't use mine. Like, who is it when you call your name that you are referring to? You hold on to something. Is it the body? If you are limited to your body, then what happens when you dream and you leave the body? Who is the person who resists when I say, open your heart to these people in pain? try to find that me. And try to put some kind of name on it. It's elusive. It's hard to see what you grasp to when you're afraid. Because it doesn't really exist. Is the me your thoughts or your feelings that rise up to the surface of your mind and then fade? These ephemeral bubbles, is that me? Is that you? What do you mean when you say me? What is the picture that comes to your mind? Some kind of solid thing. Like you go through time and your body changes moment by moment and your mind has new thoughts and feelings moment by moment, but then there is some kind of part of you that just doesn't change, and that's you. And that's why you have one name. You believe that. You believe in that. You hold that. You grasp to it. That me doesn't exist. That me is a construct, a picture in your mind. Doesn't exist. if you go to the very core of you, to the very center of your heart, what will you find? Will you find that solid thing? No, there's no solid thing in the middle of your heart. There's nothing but empty sky. Get rid of your name for a moment and float in the space where everything is constantly changing, including you. Constantly changing thoughts, constantly changing perceptions, constantly changing moments of consciousness, and there is nothing else. Just imagine it for a minute. Just let go for a minute. Just a stream. A beautiful, never-ending stream. And in the next moment, you have the capacity to be anything. Try to feel that freedom. That freedom of infinite possibility of what the next moment may bring. It's like you're listening to a song and you're halfway through and you don't know what the next note is going to be. And by the time you hear it, it's gone. And the next one is coming. And that's what it's like. Feel each passing moment of thought. A new dawning of you. Okay, you can start to come out of your meditation. So I have another story to tell you. I hope you're not getting bored of all the retreat stories. This is another animal story. This is like the only beings we come into contact with half the time, so. And, you know, my partner doesn't really like it when I talk about him all the time, so I have to tell other stories. So this story takes place in the dome again, my favorite place in the whole world. And so we were sitting on our bed one day in the afternoon doing some kind of, I don't know what we were doing, looking at some scripture or some holy thing. And all of a sudden, we start to hear this noise that sounds like it's coming from inside the tube of our wood stove. We have a beautiful, tiny little wood stove, and then this big, huge pipe that goes all the way, almost 20 feet up, this big black pipe, and then it, like, turns and goes into the wall and then comes out on the top, you know, outside to let the smoke out for our fire, because it does get a little bit chilly here in the winter. If you wanted to send the retreatants anything, you should, like, send them wool socks. Like, they would love it. Just send a bunch of wool socks. Just, but not in the summer, because then they'd just be like, what's this, you know? But if you, like, know how to sew, that's, like, such a cute, sweet retreat gift. They would cherish them to their hearts, I swear. So, anyway. There's this noise in our pipe there, and we look up, and all of a sudden, this mouse pops out of the bottom. Like, there's this pipe going into the wall, and then there's this little tiny space between the mud and the pipe, and there's this face. It's like, you know, it's so cute. And he runs along the side of the wall because they can defy gravity, and they can go anywhere. They can go on the ceiling. It's amazing. So he's running along the side of our wall, and he stops and he looks at us to make sure we're watching, you know? And then he runs some more, and then he stops, and he looks. He's like, hi! And then, like, a couple minutes later, and we're just like, oh, my God, you know, who are you? And a couple minutes later, his friend appears, you know? And there are two of them, and they're, like, scampering around the dome, and they're running up and down the walls, and they're, like, hiding in the windows, And they're so cute and funny, and we just spend like half an hour watching these new friends of ours coming in to say hello. And they don't stay long. They just scamper around and then they leave, you know, through the same hole in the wall. Very, very high up underneath the pipe. And so this starts happening frequently. I think my mistake was we were outside on our porch, our beautiful porch that some holy people made, this beautiful wooden porch of our other house. We have two houses, we're so spoiled. And this little mouse came, and I made the mistake of giving him a Cheerio. And then they knew that they could do anything to us, and we weren't going to do anything back, you know. So these mice come in, and they're totally not afraid. You know, they go, and they sit on the windowsill, and then I come up and, like, try to surprise them by opening the curtains really fast. And they just look at me like, oh, you caught me. And then kind of like slowly meander away, like they're not scared at all of me. And I think it's really sweet. You can kind of notice this at Diamond Mountain, because we practice so much nonviolence that none of the animals are scared. And I think, I don't know, to me it's kind of a point of pride that they can feel safe somewhere in the world, because everywhere else they have to feel terrified. And all the animals are kind of like that here. You know, they'll all kind of come up to you without fear, or without so much fear. And so these mice, they would come, like, I don't know, if we were in like a grumpy mood or something, all of a sudden, like, our little mice would show up and brighten the day and like make us laugh. And they would only stay for a little bit, but then they started to make little nests in the corners of our house, and then they started to poop all over the rugs, and then I, like, my worldly thought took over, and I was sort of like battling, you know, should we seal the hole or not, because like they're so cute, but you don't want them like peeing all over everything, you know. And so finally, like, but then I was like, well, we have this huge house, and there's only two of us, and why can't we share it with a couple little very small mice? I mean, they're so small, you know. And I was battling in my mind, and then finally, like, the worldly side won out, because there was like one too many poops on the rug, and we decided to seal it. We decided to seal the hole. So we were kind of like trying to make sure they were gone before we sealed it, obviously. And and then we, you know, we did this mud thing, and half the mud fell on my head, and I was covered in mud, but finally I got the hole sealed underneath the pipe, and it was a very exciting moment for me, not being very good at those things, that to have accomplished defying gravity with mud. Like, it was like on the ceiling, you know? I mean, it was straight up, and I made it stick. I was very happy. And so then I was a little bit sad for a couple of days, because my friends were gone, and I felt a little bit guilty. And then one night, we hear this scraping noise, and it's dark, you know, and I turn the flashlight over toward the scraping noise, and there's this mouse, like, trying to eat our wax, because we don't have any food in the dome, you know, the food's in the other place, and he's sitting there trying to eat wax, and I come up to him, and he doesn't move at all. He just continues to, he ignores me, actually, and just continues to eat the wax. And then I crouch down to try and see if, you know, what he's doing. And then he sort of moves to the spot right in front of me. And then he slowly approaches me, and he comes and he sort of like nips at my like second toe for just a little bit, not so it would hurt, but just like, and then he backs away, and then he bows his head, and I'm like, what's going on? And I felt kind of like, I don't know, it sounds very strange, but that he was paying some kind of respect for me, and that I was like the priestess of the mice. And I was like, okay, I could be the priestess of the mice. I'm like happy with this title. And then, you know, he goes behind the dresser or whatever. And we go to sleep. And then, like, I hear something at night by the window next to my side of the bed. And I think, oh, it's the mouse, because they like to go into the windowsills. And in the morning, I look, and he's still there. But he's, like, so tired and weak. And I was so afraid, like, he's been living in the dome without food and water for so long. Well, he could eat the water of our offering bowls, and they do. But he just looks so, like he wasn't moving at all. And so I put my little finger into some water, and I let him lick my finger. And then I put a little pool of water on the windowsill, and he sort of staggered over and drank that. And I was looking at him very, I don't know, closely, because he wasn't moving, and he was looking right into my eyes. And all of a sudden, I had this flash of this, like, I knew this person. And I had a flash of his face in his past life, and it was this old Tibetan monk. And I was, you know, kind of surprised to see him again. And this has happened occasionally to me, but not, you know, often. Sometimes, like, happened in the Wongs, and it happened the first time I really looked at Geshe Michael's face, like, long, long, long time ago. I was staring into his eyes, and I saw the face of my teacher, my previous life. It was a very moving experience. It was the first time that ever happened to me. And it happened more recently with my partner, which is why I wrote that song I sang for you on the first day. But they say that if you are if you are practicing the Dharma, but you decide to stay in ignorance purposely, like if somebody tells you you should open your heart to all these people and try to love, and you'd be like, I just can't deal with that, and just pretend that you didn't hear it or something like that, then you'll be born as an animal, but you'll be born close to the Dharma. Like Ken Rinpoche had these dogs, you know, and they're like the luckiest dogs on the planet, because they could, you know, they're in his lap like half their life. And it was so. And usually I think what happens is they get born as an animal, and then they burn off that karma of that kind of ignorance. And then they come back again in human form to meet their teacher. And there's this like connection, you know, it's a very, very strong, powerful connection that keeps the student and teacher close to each other through lifetimes after lifetimes after lifetimes. And it's love. That's the connection, you know. There's nothing else stronger than that power, and it defies lifetimes, it defies death, it defies everything, you know. It's a really beautiful thing, the relationship between a student and a teacher. I'm getting much more appreciation for it. As the days pass, you really have to have a total sense of love for the person and be able to look into their mind and see all their obstacles and then see exactly where they want to go and then know how to take them there. And it requires all of your time and all of your focus, and it's such a great honor and a great responsibility. It's like carrying the weight of a child in your arms or something. But there's not a lot of glamour in it when you get right down to it. The student will be like hurting themselves, and you're like watching them hurt themselves, you know. It's like they're stabbing a knife into their foot over and over. And you like try to take the knife away from them, and then they lash out at you because they're so attached to the knife, you know. And then you try to reason with them like you're hurting yourself. And then you do all sorts of crazy things, like everything you could possibly think of to get them to let go of the knife. And then they kind of listen to you for a while. And like they might put down the knife. And then as soon as you look the other way, like you turn around and there they are with the stupid knife again. And you're like, no. And that's sort of what it was like with Holy Lama and myself. I'm, you know, like, he's trying so hard to get me to let go of all the crazy things I'm attached to, this terrible me, you know, that I'm grasping to, that's causing me all this pain. And I'm like, no, don't rip it away from me, you know, it hurts. And it's so crazy, you know, it's so crazy. But the power of love is stronger than any kind of fear. And that's why the path works. Because our lamas love us. So eventually, you know, we left the door open for this little guy because we knew he didn't have any food and he couldn't stay. And I just kept trying to tell him, you know, I think you should probably go. And then we were sort of at the door. He was like at the door and he was looking at me. And then he did that thing again. He like came up to my toe and like nipped it a little bit and bowed. And then he went out the door. And like that was the end of our mice because we had sealed everything very nicely. And I was just kind of left in, I don't know, this state of sort of awe that something like that could happen. And then it was like we were getting ready for our next lay room. I like to clean before lay room. It's a really good practice, guys, to like clean your entire place. It's a tradition, actually. Actually, traditionally, you're supposed to smear cow dung all over your house. But we use like, you know, the sprays now, like Windex, and we don't need cow dung because we got those fancy things. But so we were cleaning, and I was gonna go. I still had mud on the floor from when I had sealed the hole, and so I was gonna go get a pail of water because we don't have any water in the dome. I was gonna go get one and go clean the floor, and I went outside. And I went back to where our pail was, and I don't know, somehow it had been half left with water back there, and when I looked inside, there were two little mice, like, dead in the water. And it was so heartbreaking to me. To see these two little friends of mine dead in the water. And logically, I knew I would meet them again, probably in human form next time. But I felt such an incredible sense of loss myself, you know? Like, I don't have... My friends are gone. Like, these friends that used to make me laugh. Like, I used to play little games with them. I was the tiger once, and they were the mice. They really liked that game. They like it when you chase them around the dome. It's really fun for them. So I'm like sobbing over my dead friends' bodies. And thinking about this terrible place where things have to die. And it reminded me of, like, we had gone to Thailand. No, Vietnam, sorry. I don't know, it's so far away now. We had gone to Vietnam and we had gotten this really special bowl for our cereal. And it was this really beautiful, like, sea green ceramic bowl with all of these little drawing things in it. And I just loved it so much. And then at some point, it just kind of fell off the dish rack and broke into 1,000 pieces. And I felt like a similar sense of loss. Like, there was our only cereal bowl broken into 1,000 pieces on our floor. And it's gone. And my friends are gone. And, you know, I told you my Lama, Sir Gene Smith, had just passed, and all these things were ending and going towards death. And how to stop it? Even my body, you know, I asked someone to send me something of Sir Gene's because I wanted to keep something of his, and they sent me his reading glasses, and it was perfect because my eyes are going, and I used to have like more than perfect vision. I'd go to the doctor, I'd be all proud. I'm like, I have like 20/21 vision or something like that. I don't know what they said, but and now it's like I can't see the tiny print of the stupid Tibetan text, you know, and I have to. And so Sir Gene's glasses came at a perfect time. But it's depressing, these things, you know, this like death, like death of my eyes and death of my friends and death of my bowl. And how to stop it? It seems like it's so much bigger than us. Like all these crazy forces are swirling around us and we don't have any kind of power to stop it. Like, how could we have prevented these things from happening? And that's not true. There is, as I said before, this intergalactic battle between the forces of goodness and the forces of evil. And they're swirling all around you like a whirlwind. And creating, you know, catastrophic, terrible acts like wars and violence and death and destruction and all sorts of loss. And then the forces of goodness are creating the opposite, you know, like love and cures for cancer and all sorts of positive things, and they're spinning around us like these vast forces. And we are in the very center. Your heart is in the very center of this crazy battle between good and evil. And you have a moment of selfishness and like some kind of darkness comes out of your heart and feeds the demons around you and gives them more power to cause destruction. And then you have a moment of love, and this beam of light shines from your heart and feeds the forces of goodness and creates like beauty and love all around you. And it's like that, you know, there's nothing else. There's nowhere else that it came from, and there's nothing else to do. Like we were talking about what's the point, you know, of this life? Like, what are we living for? And we talked about a couple of things. We talked about like really being able to live and not just being on the edge of the pool all the time looking out at whatever's going on in life. It kind of reminds me of when I was traveling for the first time. I went on a long trip like to India and Nepal. I took this very nice, beautiful camera with me. And I was thinking that I would document my trip and that I would come home with a really amazing portfolio of all these different countries and faces. And I was very excited about that as like part of my travels. But when I got there, I realized that whenever I lifted up my camera, I was like just looking at the people from a distance. I wasn't actually able to interact with them at all or live or experience their world or their culture. And so I put away my camera and I didn't actually get any of the pictures that I had hoped I was going to get because it wasn't worth the sacrifice of not living or being there at the time. And I feel like when we hold on to this grasp of me as being some kind of solid thing, then we can't actually experience what's happening to us moment by moment. And we stop ourselves from actually ever living anything at all. And it's always like we are like not really there, you know, like we're some National Geographic journalist. So we talked about that as being like maybe a goal of life. And then I don't think you can get to that point where you actually truly live in the moment unless you meditate. Like you won't actually be able to sink into the moment. Your mind, your thoughts will always be getting in the way. And then we talked about not wanting to live in some tiny little box all by ourselves, scared and alone. To actually open our heart and feel another person or feel others. And I was thinking about like what it's like to live like that. And I don't know. I thought about like junior high school dances. Like when you get all nervous to go somewhere because you don't know what someone's going to think of you, and you feel really, there's a lot of anxiety that comes from not, from living like that. It's like this tension always whenever you enter the room. And I was wondering, like, did anybody try it to enter the room in a different way today or yesterday? Like, instead of coming in and being all self-interested and looking around for who likes me, who makes me feel good about myself, who can I get attention from, to actually totally turn it around and look for people that you can love and you can serve. You know, like Maria Montenegro, how can I help you? What can I do for you? Like, did anyone try it? Did anyone try to feel what another person was feeling today, or open their hearts to them, whether you like them or not? I wonder. And then I think everybody has this urge to really accomplish something in their life, like to really make a change in the world, to really make a difference, to do something. And everybody is capable of doing that. You all have that power. You know, there are people that built vast buildings that touch the sky, and there are people that create beautiful things like movies. Like, I think the last movie we saw was Inception, which you guys have probably forgotten about by now because you've seen like 20 billion other movies, but that's what we're stuck with for the next 3 years. And you get to this point in your meditation where you can close your eyes and you can kind of play back a movie exactly perfectly, so you don't have to go to the cinema anymore. You can just replay all the movies you've ever seen. That's called distraction, by the way. I'm not recommending it. But anyway, there are achievements that people have made in this world and for humanity. And we are capable of something far more. We are capable of actually stopping all the pain and suffering in this world. We are capable of saving everyone in the world. You know, that's what we are capable of doing. And it's far greater than any kind of achievement you can look around at in the world. And it happens like in a moment in your own heart. You know, the forces of good and the forces of evil are swirling around you, waiting for you to make your next choice. And the thing is, once you know you have that power, it's a huge responsibility. I don't know, many of you may be not convinced. Like, how can your heart be the center of the universe? What about the guy or the girl next to you? They live in a different universe. They have another world to save. In your universe, perhaps they are a an angel or a demon waiting for you to make your next choice. Or perhaps they are waiting to decide whether they are going to be an angel or a demon, depending on your next choice. And so there's this responsibility that comes, like, once you know that your heart is the center of the universe and there's this huge intergalactic battle and you are going to be the one to sway the balance and you are going to be the one to decide where the universe goes from here. Once you know that, then you can no longer sit back and do nothing. Because if you're not helping the world, then you're hurting it by keeping it in a state of pain. If you're not saving people, you're killing them. Like my little mice friends, you know? How many more deaths do I want them to experience? So you have to do something now. Like, there's nothing else in this life to do. You have to open your heart and stop all the pain in the world. And you have to do it now because people are waiting for you. I've seen many people like dabbling at the edge of their spiritual practice, like trying to, I don't know, juggle spiritual practice with like 20 other things that are just as important in their life. And it's because you haven't really let yourself understand what's going on. That the longer that you wait, the more people die. The more people suffer. And that's why we're here in the retreat. Because there are a few people who actually, I don't know, despite themselves, they looked at it. They looked at that fact. And once they looked at it, they couldn't turn away. And so you get to this point where you have to do anything and everything to open your heart, to stop the pain, to save the world. And so you're willing to actually look at all of your fears. You know, that fear of, if I lose myself in another, who's going to take care of me? Or that fear of, what if I get hurt if I open my heart so wide to another? Or that terrible, terrible underlying fear of what will happen to me if I just disappear? Will I die? So we look at these things very deeply in our meditation and out, Because really, it's that damn me that's getting in the way of everything. That's blocking ourselves from loving others. That's stopping the goodness from bursting forth from our heart and transforming the world into total purity. And so we delve, you know, like I talked about yesterday. You feel a moment of rejection, and then you look into that and you're like, why? What's really going on here? And you start to analyze the me, and you start to realize that whole feeling is just a story. And maybe it's not even your story. Maybe it's the story of your parents. You know, maybe I saw my mom get hurt when I was like so young, I can't even remember, you know, when she said, that's it, I vow never to love again, this sucks, you know. And then I somehow took it on myself, like a part of me, and then I don't need that. It's inhibiting me from love. I think I'll let that part go now. You know, I don't need that. And then you strip it away. It's like there was this picture, and now it's a slightly smaller picture because that part is gone because I just got rid of it. And it's like that in retreat. You sort of strip away layers and layers of an identity that you don't need because it's an imperfect identity. It's a failed identity. It's an identity that actually hurts you and hurts others. And so, layer by layer, you strip away the me that you have been holding on to for so long. You know? And you analyze it and you understand that it's just a picture. It's just a construct. It's not fixed. There's no such thing as a solid, unchanging me at the very core of my heart. And thank God for that, because that means we're infinitely changeable. And then in the place of, you know, you can't just walk around in a void. Like, you strip away the me, and then in place of it, you consciously build up a new picture to replace that of a me that understands how to love perfectly. And in the realm of mind, anything is possible. So why stop there? The sky's the limit, as they say. You can imagine the most perfect being that you are able to, as me. So I'd like to do a meditation. This is a holy day. It's Vajrayogini Day. We celebrate this day on the 10th waxing and the 10th waning moons. And Vajrayogini is most of our main practice here in the Sam, in retreat. So it's nice to have her blessing, or his blessing, on us today, on our last day together. So find your seat. Let gravity pull you down. Let that contrary energy lift you up. Try to find some place of stillness in between the two. And then imagine yourself as a totally different kind of being. Like we did in the Tara Sadhana the other day. First, we can start with the body. Just imagine yourself in the most beautiful, exquisite body you can imagine. A body made of light. Completely hollow on the inside. Imagine what you would look like if you had a choice, if you had complete control. What would your eyes be like? What would your nose be like? What would your mouth look like? What would the color of your hair be? Or the shape of your jaw. Go down like that through your body and just see yourself as a completely different being, as perfect as you can imagine. Body is radiating with soft light. Then imagine what your mind would be like. What is the mind of a being with pure love? Just imagine looking around. at this tent, and all the people on your side of the tent, and every person you see, it feels like you are looking into another version of you. And you feel this incredible love because you can feel their heart completely, the same as you can feel your own. And you want to give them everything they could possibly want, more than you want to fill your own desires. This crazy burning need to give everybody their heart's desire. To fulfill all their wildest dreams and more than they can even think of themselves. And then imagine that this feeling stretches beyond the tent out into the entire world. And you can see a big ball of light in your heart, and then light shooting out from your heart to every single being in the world, and loving them and hearing them and knowing them. Wanting to serve them, knowing that you will serve them, okay, you can. Come to open your eyes. So, a lot of the practice of the retreat has to do with creating a whole new identity for ourselves, an identity of somebody who actually can love and can open their hearts completely. Because if you really understand what's at stake, that's the thing you have to do. If you really love anybody else, that's the thing you have to do. And it's interesting. They say the storehouse of karmic seeds lies in your picture of yourself. In your identity. So, what does that mean? It means if I think I'm a person who can be rejected, then I create a space in the world for rejection to happen. And if I think of myself in a certain way, then I create a space in the world for someone to do something terrible out of anger and violence to happen in my world. Like, it all stems from how I think of myself, and it ripples outward. And so, to think of yourself in a new way, in a special way, to think of yourself with a new identity, and actually come to start to believe that, is the highest way to bring the world to happiness. It's wild. It's very radical idea. I think that's a Geshe Michael word, radical. Stole all these things from my Holy Lama. It's like the highest... that's what you're supposed to do in Buddhism. You're supposed to plagiarize flagrantly and steal everything you can possible from your holy teachers. And I can always tell, like, who has what root lama by, like, how they talk, because they start to morph into their teacher in this really amazing way. Like, it's so... Like, I've seen people look like Lama Marut. I've seen people look like Lady Ruth. I've seen, like, all these... It's, like, so amazing to me to watch. And they don't know they're doing it. And I'm like, I can tell even before they tell me they're even one of their students. And it's so beautiful the way the lineage flows like that, you know? It's so beautiful. So, yeah, radical. So, you know, you sit down in your meditation cushion and you see yourself as a body of light. And then, like, what happens when you come out and you look down at your arm? I can't see my arm, but if I could. And all of a sudden, like, you don't see that same picture that you did as you did in your meditation. And, like, how do you... Because in our jobs... as retreatants, our lives, we're supposed to be holding that image of ourselves, that pure image of ourselves, as much as we possibly can, like, hopefully, like, 24/7. Because that's this really, like, quick path, radical way of changing the world as quickly as possible for and saving the people that we love. And so what do you do when you get out of meditation and you don't, you know, see a body of light? Well, that's not a problem because that's just your emanation body. And you're just emanating as a human retreatant. And that's, you know, that's not so much of an issue because... enlightened beings, they can take any form that they want in order to help others. You know, they can be mountains, they can be mice, they can be lizards, they can be all my friends. Probably are. But what about your mind, you know? Like... you go to your... box on Wednesday just after the caretakers have kindly slaved and labored to deliver you delicious, amazing, organic food, and you realize that they forgot the what was it, like the Guatemalan coconut juice or whatever. And like there's a moment of irritation in your mind, and like, does Vajrayogini have irritation? And then what do? When you catch yourself having a mental affliction attack? Because in retreat, like, these moments of irritation, they're not fleeting. They don't just go away. Everything in retreat gets bigger. So if you have it, it probably goes, flares up into this. And it's crazy, and you know it's crazy, and you just can't get yourself out of it. What do you do to hold on to that vision of yourself as a totally perfect being? Because the holding on to the vision of yourself as a totally perfect being is what's going to save everybody, and you can't let it go. So, I don't know. In Tantra, we say, use anything and everything for your path. So here's a profound idea. Like, it's not a mental affliction. You are, and you send yourself in the moment into a different kind of meditation. And you take that irritation and you say, I'm going to feel the irritation and the anger of every single other being in the planet today, and I'm going to burn it up inside of me right now, and I'm going to dissolve it completely, because I'm a holy angel and I have the power to do that. And so you transform everything and anything into the path of the angel. And then the world starts to become really pure. And then you can enter into a world of pure magic. If you can let go of yourself, and you can start to immerse yourself fully . Then the world starts to transform into a totally different place. We were at the Lama House just after we got into retreat. And we were busy cleaning it out and throwing out almost everything inside of it. And we heard some noise outside, and it was night. And as I said, when we first got into retreat, it had snowed. And so there was still this big blanket of snow on the ground. And we go outside, and there's this huge boar staring at us, and her mouth is like dripping blood, and the blood is falling onto the snow and turning it bright red, and we're like, oh my god, it's the Diamond Sow. We couldn't really believe our eyes, you know, like she was just there, like with their fangs and everything, like. And then a couple moments later, we realized that she had gotten into one of the garbage bags and was munching on a bag of Sindura powder. But there she was, you know? Like, there she was, dripping blood into the snow for a moment. And for a moment, my view was pure. And for a moment, I really saw her. And I really believed in her. And then she just kind of turned back into a pig getting into my garbage. But the world doesn't have to stay fixed. Everything is really ephemeral. You know, people's faces can shift and shift back again. And the world can shift and shift back again. And you could be living in a totally magic realm all the time. Who gets to live in a magic realm? Someone who's born of magic, of course. So you have to work hard on your meditation and figuring out what kind of me you're holding on to, and then maybe switching out all the imperfections, you know, with something pure and perfect. I hope I haven't gone over some people's heads here. I felt like it was a good day to talk about this kind of practice. Holy day. They are all connected. You can't even see the moment of the Diamond Sow if you're not willing to immerse yourself in the moment. You won't have the strength to let go of your fear of grasping to yourself until you find out how to love. The path of Tantra is like the fastest way, and sometimes I think it might be the only way. In sutra practice, we go about negating everything to get to emptiness. And in Tantra, it seems like we go the opposite direction. Like we immerse ourselves fully in something to get to the clear light. When you're looking into somebody's eyes and you go so deeply that you let go of yourself and you start to actually dissolve into the experience of the moment or the person or the feeling so deeply that you actually dissolve into the source of it. It has to do with our inner body. With our two side channels, specifically. It is the reason why we can use bliss as a path. But we can also use love. It's more direct, it goes straight to the heart. And we can also even use pain. We can, any kind of heightened emotion will, it brings the winds either into one channel or the other. Right now, the winds are sort of slowly meandering through all the different parts of your body. And then when you have a very strong moment of desire or anger, then the winds get pulled into these channels and out of the other channels. And then something really important, they increase in strength. And then whatever you do in that particular moment has a very, very strong karmic resonance. So usually, if we have a moment of intense desire or anger, we will do something bad that actually locks us into a cycle of pain even more deeply than ever. But if you are a tantric practitioner and you have some kind of understanding or wisdom, then you can take that same energy of desire or anger and actually ride it like a wave into the central channel and to the clear light. And that probably deserves another whole class on its own. But I think that's all I'm really going to say about it now. You can take it home with you and sleep on it. But it's the basis of our practice. So I don't really want to go. But I'm sure it's getting to be that time. I had some kind of bell plans in my clock and they've been dinging and I've been ignoring them. I wanted to say thank you all for coming. The three or four of you that I heard, and then all the rest of you that stayed really, really quiet. I hope that these 4 days have been something that you can take with you and actually apply in your life, and that you will take the feeling of the retreat with you, and especially, I think, the memory of all the retreatants who are working so hard to really, and just committing themselves fully to accomplishing their goals. Because I can get up here and talk till I'm blue in the face about everything, but really that just makes a far greater statement, you know. And send them your prayers and send us your love, and keep sending it. I know you have been, and we feel it. And know that we are working as hard as we can for all of you as well. So, I'd like to end with one more song. This is a song that came to us. We do this practice called Sojong, which is, I think Geshe Michael talked about it. It's a practice you do twice a month on the full moon and the new moon, of confessing all the bad things you've done in the last 2 weeks, and then rejoicing in all the good things that you've done. And traditionally, in this, it's a very beautiful practice, and what we do is we write all the things on little pieces of paper, and then we burn them one by one, and we see them just getting dissolved into the flames and being purified, or with the good things getting dissolved and the smoke going out to the world. And it's a very beautiful, holy practice, and it's a joy to do together when we're on break periods, or like alone if we're in deep retreat. And we always call Lord Buddha the first teacher, right? Adinata. Down to listen to our sojong, confession and rejoicing. And so one night we were out there, and just spontaneously we started to sing the short mantra of Lord Buddha together, in sort of a call and response. So I thought, you know, it's a nice quiet tune to send you home with. So I'd like to do that. You guys get to listen, and then the retreatants get to sing back. And I'll feel like we're sharing our practice with you, I guess, with this song. So I guess I have to start right here. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Swaha. Muni Mahamuni Swaha. Muni Swaha. So please go enjoy your Lama Chupa, and we're going to be doing the same at the same time, so we can feel some kind of connection to you through that practice. And I love you, and we are all working for you and thinking of you, and you can call whenever you need, and I will hear you and I will be there. Good night.